Well, for all good Adventists, we've got the lesson for everybody. Doing. Being and doing. Isn't it a good thing to think about doing? Aren't we a people of doers? It's interesting to think about being and doing. And James is, as Rob has shared, is thought to be believed the author of this, the brother of Jesus. And, you know, there's controversy about that, but according to Rob and what he believes, and I'm going to go along with him in that because I think he's up much more studied than I am, that this is the brother of Jesus. So it's interesting to keep that in mind. If here the brother of Jesus, who really probably didn't believe his brother, like most of us don't at times, and then later realized, wow, he was the Son of God. What must have that been like for him to come to that recognition? And when did he come to that recognition? After the crucifixion, after Jesus rose and left. So, I mean, that to me adds a real interesting background. And you know, it's kind of an interesting realization that all of us have our own timing. All of us come to our own conclusions. And the conclusions we come to are so powerful when they come out of our own experiences. So when we read and think about James, and I didn't know what Ernie talked about last week, I usually like to go listen to what was said before I come to talk if I wasn't here. And it's not on the internet, so I don't know if he didn't like it or if he didn't, whatever. It's not up there. Maybe I didn't see any of the Jameses on the internet, so maybe they're still in process. But anyway, it's interesting to think about in the background of this, this being the brother of Jesus and what the message is. And today we're talking about being and doing. And I don't know if any of you read the first day's thing. It talks about the great Blondin. You ever heard of him? B-O-L-B-L-O-N-D-I-N. Became famous for walking across Niagara Falls on a tightrope. This was in 1860. In September of 1860, the Prince of Wales had witnessed Blondin's crossing of the falls with his assistant on his back. So here he had walking on a tightrope with his assistant on his back. After the walk, Blondin turned to the British prince and offered to carry him across the falls too. Although the prince had heard of the man's skills and had even just seen them in action, he was still not ready to place his life in Blondin's hands. Now, what do you think when you hear that? What do you think of that? Smart man. Okay, why do you say that? You wouldn't put his life. You just seen the assistant on the back. So you wouldn't do it. What do the rest of you think? You agree, huh?
His assistant was being paid.
Okay, so he wasn't being offered enough to do it, maybe, huh? Maybe if he'd said, well, Prince, I'll give you blah, blah, blah.
The assistant didn't have a choice.
Oh, the assistant didn't have a choice. Okay, so if it's a situation, if we're going to do it just for chagrins, why do it? But if it's going to be that we're escaping danger, then I might consider it. Would that change your mind, Randy? Okay.
You'd have to know what the danger is.
You'd have to believe in the danger to go across the way there, huh? The other side needs to be on fire, you know. The enemy's coming quickly, and we've got moments to go here, huh? Before you jump on his back, huh? But I thought that was an interesting story there. Interesting statement the man made to the prince. Okay, you ready to go? It shows to me the relationship aspect of this. And that assistant probably more than probably, had enough belief, or maybe was stupid enough, whatever you want to say, he went and did that. The prince said, no, not me. I think I'll stay here. Politely declined, I'm sure. But in a sense, isn't that what we're talking about with our belief in Jesus Christ? Where's the similarities? Where's the differences?
Jesus Christ has the power.
He has the power.
We can have true faith in Him. He's not going to fall.
He's not going to fall. Okay. But do we... Here, this prince actually witnessed this man doing it.
Still just a man.
Still just a man. Okay. How about the rest of you? Where's the similarities, differences? Go ahead.
Well, for some people, they could make the argument that they haven't seen anything yet.
Okay, that's an interesting point. Okay, then.
I'll believe when I see it.
I'll believe when I see it. I don't want to go out and just keep saying that, you know, I can explain everything that happened in this world without a God. That's what some people believe. And therefore, we're just putting ourselves in blind faith. This man, the prince, at least actually saw it occur. That's interesting. Go ahead.
I always copy off the college, the CQ every week. And in there, they have a little example that in Jamaica, the parents, when they're dealing with their children, if they don't do what they ask them to do, or they're stubborn, okay, then it's the same as a person who would bite or eat a stone. Would you do that? Would you put a stone in your mouth and eat it? Okay. Or would you salt through a wooden spoon? That's crazy, mm-hmm. isn't it? Mm-hmm. Okay. Or die of sunburn. Well, we could do that, you know, die of sunburn. But what it means is that they're stubborn. They don't change their way of thinking, and that's what makes us, if we're too stubborn, you know, we're not going to make it today. Right?
Well, we all could say the prince was stubborn. He saw the reality of being safely walked across that tightrope. Yeah. But, okay, go ahead.
I don't think the prince was stubborn. I think there are leaders and there are followers. And the prince was a leader and a thinker. And the other person did whatever he was told without thinking.
Desistent.
And I think that has such a relevance to us in religion today.
Mm-hmm.
Because we have whole churches that do, I mean, whole denominations that do what they're told. They don't have to think it through. And that's a dangerous thing, you know.
That is a dangerous thing, absolutely. So the assistant was just doing what he was told, doing what his job was, and wasn't thinking. Okay?
I think it's relevant for us as Adventists.
Okay. Tell us how you think it's relevant.
Well, I think it's dangerous for Adventists to do what they're told without thinking it through.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. How about the rest of you? What do you think in this process?
I think the danger is very much there in this case. In other words, it's nothing or it's an everlasting life. Which do you want? Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're all going to die, and if that's the end, why? There's nothing. If we want to live forever, we go across the road.
Go across the rope, but not on Blondin's back, huh?
Well, no, I think he says that was a man.
That was a man, huh?
I think Jesus said, blessed those who not see and believe. The prince, he saw that. Today we didn't see Jesus, but we believe that he exists. Mm-hmm. So our faith is supposed to be only in believing that he is there. And experience
we have
to the life.
Okay. Okay, that's true. Jesus did say that. So the lesson goes on and quotes some of the things in James. And I thought it'd be interesting just to look at these read out of James, and I'm going to read out the clear word. Remember, my brothers, to be quick to listen to God's word, careful in what you say, and slow to become angry. When you're angry, you create an atmosphere in which righteousness cannot flourish, and God can't produce in you the righteous life that He desires. So strip yourself of any moral filth and evil that might still be clinging to you, which is so prevalent everywhere we look. Don't be proud, but humbly accept the word of truth which has been planted in you to protect and save you. Don't deceive yourself into thinking that you have to do, all you have to do is listen to God's word. You have to put it into practice. Whoever listens to God's word and doesn't do what it says is like a man who takes a good look in a mirror, sees himself as he really is, and then goes away and ignores what he just saw. It's an interesting analogy. He looks himself in the mirror and sees himself as he really is, and then walks away. You know, I think it's interesting. He's talking about, and James is talking about, what are we going to do? How does our life experience play a part in our everyday life? I mean, how does what we believe affect our life? He goes on to say, but if he carefully looks in the mirror of God's perfect law, he will see that it is a law of liberty intended to set him free from sin. If he continues to do this and doesn't forget what it says, but puts it into practice, God will bless him in what he does. Anyone who considers himself religious but can't control his tongue is only deceiving himself. His religion is worthless. A genuine Christian looks after the needs of others, especially orphans and widows in distress, while keeping himself unspotted from the moral pollution of the world. This is the kind of religion that our Heavenly Father accepts. What do you think? What did the words mean to you?
We're all like Thomas. I'm thinking Thomas. Experience about the
bonded.
And he told Jesus, he says, I think I believe, I think I understand, but you're going to have to help me really put this together.
Mm-hmm.
So Jesus said, and then that was Thomas's change from a hearer of the word to a doer. Then he knew. Mm-hmm. At least he had a much better picture for 30 or 40 days after they really studied. Then the light bulb goes on for all of the apostles.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that's I think that's one of the neat verses in the Bible that Thomas says, I believe, help out my
unbelief. I think that's our prayer. That's my prayer continually. I believe, help my unbelief. Go ahead. I saw somebody else over here. Someone else had the hand up. Someone say something. You know, when we think about the doing part, and I think what your point earlier was a very good one, is we have to be careful we understand what the doing's about. The doing is a result of something. It's not the end all. And I think sometimes it's easy to get caught up in the doing part of it, except and yet it's an important part of it. Because the doing is really the expression of what's in the life. That's really the expression of it. I mean, you know, that's the key of everything. We can all have good words, but what does it mean to live the experience? What does it mean to? The lesson goes on to talk about the rich young ruler. Interesting story about the rich young ruler. He came there thinking, I just needed to understand, what is it? I just feel like there's something lacking. And when it was revealed what was lacking, he turned away sadly. He turned away. You know, that's... And we don't know the you know, that's one moment in time, and that who knows what else happened to that person's life. But the reality is that we all have that. And I think that's what the mirror is. When we look and see that lacking, what do we do then? Last weekend I was in New York City. We were visiting my daughter, who's a ER doctor up there working our residency. And, you know, what's interesting is to be a part of that city experience and this, you know, it's just a different world. It's so different than what we live here. And it's not good or bad, right or wrong. It's just different. And we were getting on the subway Friday afternoon, going downtown to meet somebody and have supper with them. And when the platform, we were sitting in five seats there, my wife and Carol and my daughter and then two other women, and there's a couple people down there, and there's this man now sitting down there who was yelling all kinds of obscenities. I'm not scared of nobody. The only people I love is God, my mother and my sister, and blah, 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 you, blah, blah, blah. You know, just very colorful language. You know, not unusual to see somebody that maybe has probably mental health issues. So he was, like I said, about 25 feet away, sitting in another little five seats. And then he decided to get up. So he walking down to our seat and just yelling and screaming. And so then he comes, and a man comes up the stairs, and the man with his little child sits there, or comes up, and he walks by the guy, and the guy looks at him, they look at each other, and they just demand what the kid walks on. You know, so then he comes to where we're sitting, and he goes down to the other end where I'm sitting. I'm on the end, my wife and Farron, and then two other seats, and these are all just like they're sitting here in a row. So the individual starts yelling at this woman, ah, blah, 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 and the woman goes back, and I'm thinking, well, what's going to happen here? You know, it was anxiety. And then he said, interesting statement, he said, I'm not going to hit no woman. I don't hit women. Because she kind of, you know, stressed. So then he moved down toward my wife and my daughter. And they were looking their phone. And one thing you do when you're in a situation like this, you never make eye contact. You avoid engaging. Because engagement means possibility of conflict. So they were looking on their phones, and I'm sitting there, and then he went like this to their phones. Ah! Oh, and he started pressing about iPhones. Ah, oh, I don't need no phone. And at that point, I said, back up, back up. Well, that turned all the focus to me. Then he got right there. And I mean, he was literally right here. And you know what I kept thinking about? This is like every foster kid I ever see in the world. They want engagement. And I'm not scared of you. Took off his jacket. And he was a little shorter than me, muscled up, looked like he said, I've been in Texas prison, I've been in Oklahoma prison, I've been in New York City prison, and I'm not scared of nobody. And I think he's been in prison the way he looked like. He had nothing else to do except build up his muscles. And you know what I thought there? I sat there when he looked at me, I said, you know what? Nothing good's going to happen here. Nothing good's going to happen here. And I just continually, and I didn't even, then he got into my face. You know, first he was standing up over me and I was sitting down. Then he got down like here so he could look at me. I looked at him briefly. And it was interesting to realize there wasn't anything good going to happen here. And all of a sudden, for some reason, he stopped, walked away. I told this story to one person. He said, that's where a concealed handgun prior to law would have been a good thing. I said, you know what? I don't think a concealed handgun would have done a thing to that man. Because he was not. All he wanted is engagement. He wanted to feel validated. He wanted to feel like and the only way he knew how to feel validated was to get in a physical confrontation. I think I'd have showed my handgun or blew it on my handgun. He'd have fought me for the handgun. Someone would have got hurt. Might have been me. Who knows? But in that kind of situation, it was so fascinating to realize that was just pure fear that had become total anger at the world. I mean, the language he used, he got in my face and he was right there, you come on, you know, he just was wanting me to engage with him. And in that moment, you know, I thought, there's nothing to do here except wait till he does something and then I'll figure out to do it. And I kept looking, and there's one man down there, and I thought, well, maybe he'll come. I got, you know, these women right here. And there weren't a lot of us. It's about 4 in the afternoon. And I think what happens is we sometimes don't realize what fear can do and how it can just become totally, you know, I think he just felt like he was nobody in this world. And so he wanted to feel like he was somebody. And the yelling and the things he kept yelling were just phenomenal. And the emotions that he was going on. And, you know, in that kind of situation, what do you do? I even thought, well, what if I said, well, God bless you? Or he wouldn't have mattered what words I used. Engagement to him would have validated him. And not validated him in a way that's going to help him. It would have just, okay, now I got you to interact with me. Now we can go at it. And I don't know what would happen. I mean, you know, I don't know. But sometimes in those kind of situations, we're kind of caught in a moment where we feel, what did we do? Talk about doing. There was nothing to do. Until something happened, I didn't know what to do. I'm not going to engage in a physical struggle until there's need to be. And it was interesting, after we got in the subway and went into downtown, and my wife and I said, we leave you in this city, going to be by yourself. And so we started talking about what would you have done if you were by yourself. And then my daughter kept saying, well, I was so worried about you, Dad. I was so worried about you. And Carol said, well, let's see, I think I could have maybe given him a swift kick, and the track was about 5 feet away, and maybe it fell onto the track. And, you know, all kinds of things we think about doing. But sometimes the doing is just realizing that there is nothing to do. And to realize, what's the true purpose of that? The true purpose of his behavior was to get some kind of validation. You think about it. I think that's what the devil wants. He wants validation. He wants to be acknowledged as somehow. That was his whole thing. I want to be acknowledged as much as Jesus, you know. I want to be in that position. I want to be validated. And so, in that process of trying to validate, we sometimes realize that we're playing right into the devil's hand. Because we're somehow acknowledging. I love what Ernie says, you know, if we could understand evil, then it would be validation for it. I mean, we have a lot of theories about it. We can talk about brain chemistry. We can talk about, you know, I don't know if this man, I believe he was on some kind of, he hadn't taken his meds or had self-medicated and it wasn't working very well. But whatever it was, this man was really out of it. And I go to this one foster home, and they have Bible verses on the children's wall. And in Exodus 14:14, there's a great verse. But Moses said to the people, this is 13, do not fear. Stand by and see the salvation of the Lord, which he will accomplish for you today. For the Egyptians whom you have seen today, you will never see them again. This is the verse, the 14. The Lord will fight for you while you keep silent. And that verse, I mean, I've been going to that house, and the Lord will fight for you today while you keep silent. So that's kind of a dichotomous experience to think about the doing part, and then there's moments that keep silent. There's moments we just realize the Lord will fight for me today. The Lord will fight for you while you keep silent. Of course, we understand the context of the story, But it's interesting to think about that moment. Sometimes we just need to realize there's nothing to try to prove. There's nothing to defend. There's nothing to justify. It's a matter of staying silent. And you know, going back to what we're talking about with doing, that sometimes is more as difficult as it is to do something. Don't you think? Isn't it harder sometimes just to say, I'll just let things happen and see what happens here? Because we want to get in there and we want to say, okay, I got to get this done, I got to get this done, I got to take care of this, I got to do this. And in a way, that's almost saying the same thing. It's like, I've got to be my own salvation here. So it's a really contrasting thing between doing and having silence, having stillness. I think what James is talking about is the moments of doing has to be, what does this reflect about what I believe? What does it reflect about what I think? How does my behavior really reflect back about what I'm believing about myself? And then how do we understand what that means about us? Because you think about it, you know, that old thing of, well, it's not what you do on Sabbath, it's what you do the other days of the week. Well, that's true about all of us. It's not what we do when we're all dressed up and we're all in our nice things. It's how we live our lives in general. And then that's just a reflection of that. Lord, I put you all in a stupor. Either that or you're all asleep. I don't know which one. What are your thoughts? Tell me what you're thinking.
I would like to substitute living.
Okay. Okay.
You know, we're hearers of the word, then we live out that word.
Okay.
I'm more comfortable with that.
Okay, so for you, you make that transition from the doing to the living experience. Okay.
I just don't like using the term doing.
Go ahead.
Paraphrase to an early church writer, he says something to the effect that if we do as a sense of responsibility, we don't do it all.
Mm-hmm.
Same way she said, if we obey as a sense of responsibility, we don't obey.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's a well put. Well put. How about the rest of you? Go ahead.
Well, the other day I was at Walmart and I was going through the line, and then a fellow behind me tapped me on the shoulder and said, "How are you today?" And I said to him, "What do you mean? Why are you asking me that?" And he said, "I ask everybody that. If I want to know all about them," he said, "they'll stop and talk to me. And then I can give him the story of my life," right?
Mm-hmm.
There in 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm. That's
but
fine.
That, you know, I believe in God. I believe that God's going to save us. And I believe that God's coming again.
Mm-hmm.
And I can put it into a Bible study just like that.
Just like that, huh? Just by someone tapping you. How about the rest of you? What are you thinking? What? How does it make sense to you, the doing and the being still? How do you put that in your own life? You've had to be still, Angela. You've had to. You're a doer. You like to be doing. You're with the kids. You're doing. What's it?
Was the most uncomfortable for me.
Okay. Tell us about it.
Because I could do absolutely nothing.
Mm-hmm.
But sit still. And whenever I went to work, I just had to literally force myself to sit still.
Okay, because there was part of you that wanted to get up and do. Because that's kind of an orientation of feeling productive. Feeling like you're doing. But yet, to that point for you, you had to sit still and let the Lord fight for you.
Exactly. Even in my classroom, because the kids were,
acting up because they've had a sub all week. And so I had to call them. And they came to a peace. And she said, this is the best class. And she said, she served a note home with my friend. And she said, I'll sub any time for you.
Wow, that's rewarding.
And that was after I spoke to them.
After you spoke to them. So in a sense, you found a way to do something what you could. And that felt good for you to do that, didn't it? It felt like, okay, I'm at least having impact. We all want to feel like we have impact. Go ahead.
Several years ago, I had a patient who was severely depressed and suffered from loss and literally cursing God. And for me to be confrontational about that would have been very much the wrong thing, even though everything in my gut was telling me I needed to correct her understanding of why, you know, God didn't do this to her.
Right, right.
So for me to be being in the Word and at the same time not doing anything, I think that's an example of how we can be a good, back to the word, Christian, and still be not actively doing something.
Right.
I have other situations where a person will unknowingly or offhandedly make a comment, and I feel the need that we need to make corrections to that and are able to move forward with that because the patient's in the right place at that
right.
in their life to do that.
Right.
So we can be in the Word and doing in that situation.
Absolutely. That's a great example with that first patient there, because the reality is that person was cursing God out of their emotions, and you relayed the emotion instead of starting to correct about their theology. And when we try to correct theology and not relate to the person, we've done nothing. We've done nothing. All we're doing is we're getting into a great theological debate. But when we simply are with the person and acknowledge their frustration. And you know, I tell parents all the time, sometimes don't listen to the words. Listen to the emotion. Or you're not going to talk that way to me. Well, okay, we can get upset about the word that kid said, but let's make sure we relate to the emotion. And then you can say, okay, now next time you're frustrated, let's talk about other ways you can tell me other than blah, blah, blah. But the key is, in that process, the doing is living with a dynamic relationship with that person. You're engaged with them. You're a part of their experience. And that, going into the called doing, that is the doing. And sometimes that's more difficult to do than to correct them. Because to correct them means, we know, we've got it right, let me tell you how it is, don't ever say that again, and we're done. But I think that's what James is saying at the end. He says it's how we are with the people that are in distress. Go ahead.
Every time we have a discussion on works or not works, something comes up, always funny, it always comes to mind. It's back that Katrina was going on, and I was responsible for the church's activities and helping people. And Sabbath afternoon, I took some friends down to came to load up some vans and bring clothing up here to set up a distribution center. We got into several very interesting discussions. And one was, let's see, should we be doing this on Sabbath? Is it okay for us to help people on Sabbath?
There's the doing. Are we, should it be, oh, just doing okay? Go ahead.
We were all joking. Think about some people in our church doing all this stuff on Sabbath. And then we got into a discussion of, is we doing this for works or are we doing this literally helping people? And it was going back and forth, and one of the guys said, well, you know, it might not be bad to build up a few points on works just in case we have this wrong.
Build a few points on works just in case we have this wrong. That's funny. But, you know, you can see all of that. There's so much discernment that you have to do. Going back to what you were saying at the beginning, where's the discernment? Where's our own critical thinking processes involved? I mean, we all have aspects of our life that we make the judgment, this is what we think is best to do. But then what do we come to the conclusion? How do we come to that decision? And what is this decision based upon? See, to me, that's as important as actually what we decide sometimes. Because the critical thinking is really where we come to understand what's motivating us. What is truthfully the why we're doing what we do. You know, and that's true about anything in life. Why is it we do what we do? And I think James is hitting really hard at that. He's saying, what is the love of God supposed to do? It's to free us. It's to create liberty. It's to create joy. And therefore, make sure we're... And then once again, the doers can say, okay, now I'm going to be real joyful because I've got to show that I've got God's love. It's a hard balance thing. Sometimes do you do things hoping that your feelings will change? Yes. I say absolutely. I tell clients all the time, you may not feel this, but I guarantee you, if you do this something different, you'll feel something different. Now, I'm not going to say what you'll feel. That happens all the time. It's in a marriage. Well, we've been together so many blah, 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 blah years, and da-da-da-da-da. I said, well, what are you doing to re-energize yourself in this relationship? Well, now, usually it's a classic thing to start talking about what the other person's doing or not doing. Or if she did this, then I might feel this way. If he did this, I might feel this way. Once again, it's what am I doing to re-energize myself? That's what James is saying. What are you doing that's reflecting what you believe? And how does that play a part of it? You know, I've personally never been in a physical fight in my life. Not sure if that's something to be proud of or something to be bad of. It's just a reality. As I was face to face with that situation, you know, part of me after it was over, I thought, well, was I afraid to fight him? I come to the conclusion I wasn't afraid to fight him. I just didn't think anything good would come of it. I was pretty sure we weren't going to make it to where we were going at the end of the day. I was pretty sure there was going to be a lot of pain involved. And I didn't think there would be any good. There wouldn't be any good come from it. And I didn't want to know this man any more than I already knew about him. And a physical fight would have meant I had to learn more about this man. So, it was just a simple matter of, I don't know of anything good. And if there's nothing good, what are we doing what we're doing?
There's a lot to be said about thinking it through.
Well, and I'm not really sure I was thinking all that. I just at the moment thought, there's nothing good going to happen here. I mean, but you know, I've thought about it later. You know, and then when this person I was telling the story to talked about, well, that's when a good concealed handgun license would have been good. I'm thinking, no, that wouldn't have been good at all. Because that man had no physical fear about anything at that moment. A handgun would have been just another challenge to him. Now, I'm not advocating or no guns. I'm just saying, at that moment, a gun would have been nothing to deter that man because he was so in his... He was, you know, he wasn't using all of his mental capacities. He was at the lowest level. He was at a pure fight or flight, and he was going to fight. He wasn't going to flight. Oh,
I did a whole analysis on him.
Well, it hit me. Well, I don't know if I did it all. I just was just momentary. I just hit me. This is a foster kid that I see all the time, and he's scared. But there's no way for me to touch that fear. There's no way to touch that fear right now because he's not, as I tell all these kids, you're not using your smart brain, you're using your dumb brain. You got to use your smart brain. You know, and you know, there's a lot of research on all the kinds of areas of our brain and what we do and, you know, all that. Anyway, it's fascinating just to know there was nothing good going to come of that. And I guess that's the biggest challenge in life, is how can we evaluate our own life and say, what good's going to come of me in this process? When is it time to do? When is it time to be still? And I guess that's the balance. I like that verse. Watch what the Lord's going to do and be still. Be still. Because I think in that process, a lot can happen to us that's almost as uncomfortable. It's almost more difficult to do that at times than it is to actually do some things.
I have another story I'd like to tell. In 1971, Betty and I were on the island of Guam. We flew there and taught there for 2 years on the island of Guam. And then, remember the old thing called harvest in gathering? What do we do now? We give that offering, right? Okay, we hear a mission story every week. Okay, but over there, this is how unselfish the Guamanians were. They said they had Seventh-day Adventists have a hospital there, and they had a clinic, and they send four doctors and four dentists every year there when they graduate from Loma Linda, and if they go there, they get certain credits. But the point was that when we did harvest in gathering, the church would go out and they'd knock on doors and say, okay, so when you knocked on the door, the Guamanians would say, and we'd say, we're from the Seventh-day Adventist Church, and you know about our clinic? Oh, yes, we know about the Seventh-day Adventist clinic. How much can we give? And I'd say, wait a minute. Can they give us a $20 bill? You know, maybe $40. And then at one place we got a $300 check.
Wow.
Who do you think that came from? One of the politicians who was running for office over there on the lawn.
But it goes back to showing that when you freely have received, you freely give. When you receive much, you give much. And I think that's an important thing. When we really think about the doing process, if we really freely receive, the doing will be an automatic. It's the living. But it's making sure we've received. Go ahead.
That reminds me of the story of the rich young.
Rich young ruler.
Mm-hmm. God knew it. Jesus knew his heart. Mm-hmm. The young man had no clue. Mm-hmm. He had so much, and he wasn't willing to let it go. Mm-hmm. But Jesus knew his heart. That's why we know the story in the Bible as an example. Mm-hmm. That it could have been like Job, that if the rich young ruler, which Jesus knew his heart, said, yes, I will give it all, and Jesus would have said, no, go on. And he could have been so much more richly blessed to be a ruler.
Absolutely.
Instead of a keeper.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
The story is told as an example, just like when God appointed Moses, no one else could do the job but Moses, mm-hmm. or Joseph, mm-hmm. or Mary, the mother of Jesus. All these people were in line because mm-hmm. they were picked to do the work that God had sent them to do. Mm-hmm. So that I always think about just what could the rich young ruler have achieved had he said, yes, I will give it all.
Absolutely.
Jesus knew his heart and knew that he wouldn't do it.
And you know what I love about that story? It's presented an opportunity, and it's a choice the rich young ruler had. And to me, that speaks volumes about our God. He's always going to make sure and reveal the condition of our heart. But then it's our choice. What are we going
to
do?
He chose not to give it up, even though Jesus meant that. Mm-hmm. That's where the story ends. It doesn't go into any more detail. Mm-hmm. What happened to the young man?
Yeah, it doesn't. But
the matter is different. Mm-hmm. We don't know that. Mm-hmm. But that being said, mm-hmm. God knows our heart and what our mm-hmm. motives are. And the story that you told about going to Trent on the Sabbath, to me that wasn't work. When he talks about work, it means your job. Mm-hmm. Your servants rest and your animals rest. Mm-hmm. That's a working day. You give your animals a day of rest. You give your servants a day of rest. You give your friends and you be unity and have a day of from physical labor. That to go do God's work of helping someone that needs help. To me, you know, that's where your heart was at.
And you know what? That's the key is everyone has to come to their own conclusions. Like that rich young ruler had the opportunity to have his heart. And he did have his condition revealed to himself. And then he had the decision how to handle that. He had the decision how to do that. And that's the key. Go ahead.
That the rich ruler, what I heard, that it's been written in another book, not Bible, like it was in Jewish, they have some old book, that he did accept Jesus later on, and with his wealth and money, he helped the early church to survive those days when they were persecuted, you know. But he accepted the Jesus later on. That's what I heard.
I've heard that, too.
The church from South Pole, you know.
Yeah. I've heard that too, but
there's not the Bible, but there's that might happen like that.
Yeah, I think once again it goes back to understanding that we all have the opportunity to have our condition revealed to us, because I think that's why God's doing what He's doing with this world is allowing each of us to have the opportunity to really see ourselves and to recognize our need for Him. My daughter lives in a community of Hasidic Jews, and they wear the hats, and they wear the hair, the little hair coming down, and they have all the clothes. And my wife and I were walking, and she said, it's just hard to imagine, from my perspective, she said, that recognize that they think that's what God wants them to do. But in their own belief system, that's so powerful for them. That's such a powerful thing. And I'm right, wrong, indifferent. It's just about that's their own experience. And I think God is working as hard with them as He is with us and revealing their condition. And I think that's the key is when you really look at what James is saying is look in the mirror and then get a clear understanding of what our condition is and then what God and His love will do. And then the doing is not even the focus. It's, wow, how can I not do? I like your word of living, Ron. It's like, wow, this living experience is such a powerful thing. It's not a duty. It's not a sense of, I've got to do this because if I don't, I'm not going to have enough points for my point system. This is just part of who I am and part of the love. And you really think about it, God's love is a continuous experience that we just have the privilege to be a part of. Whether it be a patient who's distressed, whether it be a man who's yelling in your face, how are we going to be a part of that continuous love experience that we have the privilege of being a part of? You know, the one bad I felt bad about after this, but that whole incident is, when I got on the subway, didn't call somebody to say, there's a man up there that needs some help. Please send somebody up there to help him. That's the thing I felt the worst about. I didn't do that after I got on the subway. Because, you know, he was a man who was scared to death, but didn't know it. He was scared, and he didn't know it. And out of that fear, it turned to violence, it turned to anger, it turned to hostility, it turned to wrath. But he was scared. And he needs someone to show him his condition. He needs someone to show him his where he is in life. Because, you know, and whether that happens for him or not, I don't know. But he impacted me in my life. Someone wants you. Shall we have a prayer? Dear God, we're so grateful that we can be part of the experience of understanding your love more clearly. May each one of us in our life recognize that your love is there all the time for us. And may that love continue to invigorate us, continue to enliven us in life, and continue to create that experience of freedom and enjoyment. It's not in the doing, it's in the living and in the loving. And as a result of the living and loving God, we know that we will do what you would have us to do. Help each one of us to have a restful, enjoyable Sabbath day today. Thank you. In Jesus' name, amen.